Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your talking blues, music news, and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica. Been in basketball, we paying that a lot. I'm in this get to the chicken, whip it, then I flip it and trap it off. I gotta get to the dollar, on the Hennessy and back, come on. Smoking on gas a lot, ready to whack, come on. Whack, come on. Whack, come on. Clap, clap, clap. Clap him up. This what I do to the head of the chopper. Hit him, tell him back, come on. She like Applejack. I like applesauce. Dance the boss. Dance the call. Why you trying to flex in your fashion off? Chain around my neck and I soft. Smoking on that gas, I ain't passing off. Asthma cough. Fashion low. Stash it off. Dash it off. Flash it off. Don't pass it off. I'm in the digital chicken, the trap hall with all my. Kids like mashups. That's right. You were just listening to a song that, when I first encountered it, I maybe thought was a little unlikely. And that is Mic Drop, which is BTS and Designer. BTS, as you know, is the savagely popular K-pop outfit. Played City Field here in New York a couple months ago. Designer is
K-pop accessory,
yeah,
designer.
Right. He is an ad-libber who occasionally makes songs. But when that song came out, it was so striking because it was really probably the first genuine BTS American hip-hop collaboration that at least I can think of. I'm sure some of the stands will correct me if I'm wrong. Although to be honest, I didn't like it as much as, did you ever see the video of BTS meeting Designer on the red carpet?
Yes, amazing.
That was really good.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that. So when this song first came out, I was a little bit like, you know, I don't know if I love that song, but it certainly like portends some things. And those are the things that we want to talk about on Popcast today. I'm here with Joe Coscarelli.
Second to last Popcast of the year.
That's true. That's true. But not for life.
No.
Not for life. We hope you're on the verge of having an incredibly beautiful holiday season. I'll be traveling. Joe?
I'll be traveling.
I know. We'll be
just a couple days.
You know, anywhere you can take time for yourself, Popcast would like to encourage you to take time for yourself. So an interesting thing has been happening. And it's something that Joe and I have been speaking about on and off for much of this year. And finally, about a month and a half ago, we decided to put our pros where our thoughts were and start to write some of this stuff down. And what we've been arriving at is that pop music as a category really is no longer pop music as a genre. And I think that's something that seems very self-evident. And it's certainly anyone who listens to Popcast, anyone who reads anything that we've been writing, this will not come as a surprise.
Or even uses Spotify in like any sort of plugged in way.
Right. Now, that said, you may say, well, what's taken its place? And as we've been talking about it, the thing that I kept coming back to over and over again is that almost all of the music that is currently popular in the purest sense of popularity actually is working with a pretty similar playbook. And I'm talking about Latin trap and reggaeton. I'm talking about K-pop. I'm talking about hip-hop and post-hip-hop. I'm talking about even pop punk and emo. I'm talking a little bit of dance music and EDM. I'm talking about country music. What you start to see once you stop looking at all these genres independently and you start looking at them as one big blob is you see that they're all working from pretty similar idea sets. The stars are people who sing and rap. And it's not true for every single person, but broadly speaking, stars are people who sing and rap. There's hip hop in the production. There's trap in the production. A lot of it is kind of downer music. Like there's some melancholy running through a lot of these genres. And there's a tremendous amount of fluidity happening in terms of how stars are asserting themselves. They are not always asserting themselves by being the macro top dog figure. They are asserting themselves by kind of appearing impressionistically in a lot of places. And so what I started to think is then, okay, for 30 years now, we have said pop music is this thing. It's Madonna, it's Michael Jackson, it's Katy Perry, it's Justin Timberlake. There's no utility in that anymore. So I wrote this essay. It's in Arts and Leisure this weekend, hopefully on the internet by the time you read it. Joe, talk about what you did. We were like the pop package. This became a thing
the pop
like the last 2 months. Really,
I mean, it's, to be fair, it's been a thing for a lot longer than that, but we turned it into a year-end thing. Originally, it was going to be a summer thing, if
is
you
that
recall.
Right?
Do you not remember?
I
think
we had an
August date penciled in for A&L. I'm glad you've erased that from your mind.
I've erased it and from my to-do list.
Sorry, Karen and Lauren Manley.
Yeah, sorry to anybody involved in the production process of this piece.
So I think a lot of the inflection points you're talking about, this became more clear with in the way that people have consumed music in the last few years. And so all of this sort of dovetails with streaming becoming the dominant mode of music consumption, right? Nobody buys CDs anymore. Nobody really downloads.
I buy CDs.
Some people buy CDs. They're hard to find, though. That's as we'll get to some, a lot of these
Yeezy supply.
Yeah, a lot of these CDs, a lot of these albums we're talking about were not even available on CD when you wanted to buy them.
Wasn't it just as a quick sidebar? Wasn't it just 3 years ago that Chance the Rapper had to basically lobby the Grammys to be eligible to be nominated, even though there was no physical version of, was it Acid Rap or the second one?
I think it was Coloring Book.
Coloring Book.
Yeah.
And at that time, that seemed so radical, even not from a hip hop perspective, but just that would even be entered into the conversation.
Right.
And now CD, I don't know. I have like, I own maybe like 9 CDs that came out this year.
I think I have a copy of Scorpion and a copy of Ye just for laughs. Like, just because.
Well, then you would find my apartment hilarious.
Both of them were gifts.
Gag gifts.
Yeah, literally. They were gag gifts. So what I did to sort of supplement John's piece and jump off a little from it is talk about just how streaming factors into all of this. And basically, this is a giant divide between artists who stream well, artists who perform well on the internet, and artists who don't.
So I was also, a thing that this reminded me of, and we were talking about this earlier today in a meeting, there is a pretty famous New Republic cover story from the mid-90s, I want to say, or like maybe 93 or 94, written by David Samuels. Shouts to David Samuels, the OG, the legend. And it's talking about actually the sound of Young White America is hip hop. It's not indie rock or pop. Yeah, right.
Which head at that explosion emoji.
Right. Which at that time, that was a thing that people were like, what? Like, people were shocked. And the opening segment, the lead of his piece, is basically talking about the arrival of SoundScan and how, you know, prior to SoundScan, the way that the charts were measured is like Jimmy from Jimmy's Records in Roanoke, Virginia would call up and be like, yeah, we sold like 36 copies of this week. And Billboard aggregated all that stuff and kind of did whatever zhuzhing they needed
fuzzy
to do.
Math,
yeah. And came up with something. So the lead of the David Samuels piece is America goes to bed one night before SoundScan and thinks that the most popular album in the country is by R.E.M. and it wakes up and it's N.W.A. And that is basically the first iteration of where we're ending up now, which is you wake up with Spotify and SoundCloud and YouTube. And what are we learning?
Right. And we've seen this in flashes over the years. Right. You saw this when Crank That, Soulja Boy,
yes.
You know, sort of hits, you know, around the ringtone era. Mm-hmm. You saw it again, you know, with something like Psy, Gangnam Style.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, you saw bits and pieces of this. You saw
Psy's
fine. Psy's fine. You know, there was a blip with Bobby Shmurda.
Yes.
That song all of a sudden is in the, you know, the top 10 off of a Vine or whatever, you know. And then I think this era really starts for me around Bad and Bougie, right? When when Bad and Bougie tops the Billboard Hot 100.
Still
and all of a sudden,
meme moment.
Yes.
But also, where does Bad and Bougie fall in connection with the changing in the Billboard? I mean, I looked, Billboard charts are kind of always kind of changing.
Yeah.
But when did they announce that kind of like, we're changing the algorithm for real?
So it's changed a couple times over the last few years. I think streaming had just started to be factored in a real way.
Just before
on the
that.
Hot 100, not long before that.
Sure.
And that's what you got. And it's really telling. If you look at, so one of the charts we have along with this piece gives you the divide really well. And this is top 10 albums of the year, including streaming, and top 10 albums of the year, just including traditional sales, which means CD, vinyl, and digital, like iTunes downloads, which again, not that many people do. You know, so the top 10 albums of the year with streaming is pretty much what you'd expect. Drake, Scorpion, Post Malone, Greatest Showman soundtrack, which is sort of an outlier. We could do a whole other package on soundtracks, but that's the weird one. Then you got Cardi B, Travis Scott.
How come no one's done the oral history of the Greatest Showman?
I mean, that would require a lot of listening to the Greatest Showman.
I know, but don't like, I'm just like, there's, why is there no counterintuitive web programming that's really writing for the Greatest Showman soundtrack? I just want to say that if you are working for a web outlet and you have not considered doing an oral history of the Greatest Showman soundtrack, you lost.
I bet the Facebook traffic will be bonkers.
Stupid.
Moms everywhere.
Real talk.
And again, I love moms. Moms have the best taste in music. I just don't. Look, I've gotten emails about saying this on podcast
before. Have you?
Yeah. From moms? About calling out moms and aunts and whatever as a shorthand for people who listen to the radio.
Like people accusing you of yes, really?
Yes.
We don't. We embrace moms. Yeah.
This is a tangent.
Yeah.
I think I wrote that back. I was like, no, it's not what you think.
It's
like, I'm just saying Facebook traffic.
Don't email Joe.
Don't email me. Migos, XXX, Black Panther soundtrack, Ed Sheeran, Post Malone. That's a top 10 with streaming, right? It's what you'd assume. And yes, Post Malone has two entries in the top 10 most consumed albums of 2018. You know, go write a letter to your congressman. I don't know what to tell you, Jeff Weiss.
I like Post Malone. I don't love Post Malone, but I feel like I get it.
All right. So if you take streaming out of the equation, it's like a whole other universe. It's the Greatest Showman soundtrack at number one. You have a Star is Born soundtrack at number two, I think. You got all kinds of people who just don't belong in this conversation. It's Jason Aldean, Eminem, Justin Timberlake, Dave Matthews Band, Carrie Underwood, Pink. These are the people who are selling albums in 2018.
Yep.
In the old-fashioned sense. We can get to how exactly they're doing it because they're also gaming the system in their ways. But these splits about how people consume music and then how that translates into who we think of as our pop stars, mm-hmm. depending on, you know, which charts are you looking at? Which radio stations are you listening to? Are you on Apple Music? Are you right on Spotify? You know, like, there are so many different views, but that one, to me, is, you just see a huge gap there.
Also, just to go hand-in-hand with that, and to circle back to the Bad and Bougie moment, if you want to talk about a before and after, let's talk about before and after Bad and Bougie. And really, before and after Bad Bougie and Black Beatles.
Right.
That's the meme moment.
Yes.
Like, that's the meme moment. Let's listen to a little Black Beatles and then a little Bad and Bougie. Just to take you all the way back to the turn of 2017 when memes ruled the earth. There'll be History Channel episodes about memes 50 years from now. American memers. That girl is a real crowd please. Small world, all the friends know of me. Young bull living like an old keys. Quick release the cash, watch it fall slowly.
I'm a Black Beetle, cream seats in the Regal, rocking John Lennon lenses, like to see him spread eagle. Took a beer to the club and let a party on the table, screaming everybody's famous. Hey, raindrops, drop top, smoking, no cooking the hot pot,
cooking.
Know your bitch, yeah, that. Cooking up from the crock pot. We came from nothing to something.
Hey,
I don't trust nobody, grip the trigger.
Nobody
call up the gang and they come and get
gang.
Cry me a river, give you a tissue. It's bad and bougie,
bad.
Cooking up with a Uzi.
Bah.
My niggas are savage, ruthless.
Savage.
We got 30s and 100 rounds too.
Clah.
My bitch bad and bougie,
bad.
Cooking up with a Uzi.
Dude.
My niggas are savage, ruthless.
Hey.
We got 30s and 100 rounds too.
Clah. So 2016. Just pulling up a Wikipedia page, as we do, just strong research here. Here are the number one singles of 2016 in order. Adele's Hello, Justin Bieber's Sorry, and Love Yourself. Zayn's Pillow Talk.
Remember that?
No.
Good song. The best Charlie Puth song ever.
Oh! Rihanna and Drake's Work. Designer's Panda.
Man, this feels like 1,000 years ago.
Doesn't it? So Drake's One Dance, Justin Timberlake's Can't Stop the Feeling. This really feels like a 1997 list. Sia featuring Sean Paul's Cheap Thrills. Not sure I could pump that for you. Chainsmokers featuring Halsey. Then things get good. Then you have Black Beatles. Then you have Bad and Bougie. And from there, everything that we are talking about in this package comes to light. You have, well, interesting footnote. We'll get back to it. Ed Sheeran, yeah, Shape Ed of Sheeran. You. We'll get back at that. You've got Kendrick, Humble. You've got Bruno. You've got Khaled's I'm the One. You have Despacito.
I've heard of it.
Despacito. You got Lil Taylor. You got Bodak Yellow, also very important for this particular conversation. Post Malone, 21 Savage, Rockstar. Another Ed Sheeran thing. Again, we'll get to him. And then this year, we've got just a lot of Drake.
Just a ton of Drake.
Actually, this is wild. Drake has been at the number one spot for half the year.
About half the year, solid, yeah.
Yeah, with some Cardi, X, Post, Childish Gambino thrown in.
So while some people might look at a list like this.
Maroon 5, I'm so sorry.
Maroon 5, we'll get. But featuring Cardi B.
Right.
You know, that's.
Although I feel like I couldn't rap any of her first two right now.
Look, we don't have to get into the Maroon 5 karaoke just yet.
Yeah.
But so it's this idea that if you look at these lists, you would say, where has pop music gone? Where are our pop stars? Right. Where, you know, Lady Gaga is going to win some Oscars. She's probably not going to win some Grammys. Oh, she could still win some Grammys.
She might win a Grammy. But not for the thing, for the other thing.
Also, like someone like Sam Smith. You know, Sam Smith put out an album at the end of 2017.
R.I.P.
It was quite quiet for him this year. But what you're arguing is that it's not that there are no more pop stars.
It's that pop has changed.
It's that pop is just way, way, way different.
And it's important because I think I'm trying to say something very clear. Not that Drake is popular. Not that Post Malone is popular. Not that these people are popular. That's self-evident. What I'm saying is that there is an internally consistent set of frameworks that almost everybody who we are talking about is adhering to.
From BTS to Post Malone to Kane Brown.
Absolutely. And so when I started thinking about kind of all the conversations that we've had on this show and in our pieces over the last year or two, they're all very similar. And so I was like, well, if you start like looking at it as an umbrella genre, what's actually happening is that pop, which is to say the umbrella organization under which all this stuff falls, actually does have an internally coherent rule book. And when you start to think of pop music, i.e. Katy Perry, Justin Timberlake, as merely a subgenre or a subset of the big umbrella thing, you really see how marginalized it is and how irrelevant the framework it's working with is when literally everybody else is working with essentially a Drake or post-Drake framework.
So let's talk a little about these old frameworks that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, there's a lot to be said for Max Martin and Dr. Luke.
Oh, absolutely. And this is in no way to like detract from a lot of the really quality stuff
that came out of that era.
Oh, absolutely.
No, of course.
Not.
So we're basically talking about the early to mid aughts.
Well, let's talk of it in two ways, because I think the problem taxonomically begins in the 80s. When you have artists like Michael Jackson and Madonna who are so popular, they're so huge. That's when you have the two ideas of pop really starting to become one. That's when people can't see that it's not merely popular music. There is a genre functioning under the auspices of pop.
And how did that genre sound?
That genre was post R&B, like post 70s soul.
Light soul.
Yeah. A little bit club oriented, especially as you moved in the mid to late 80s. And it's not that other things weren't popular. I mean, obviously Guns N' Roses come in the late 80s. Like there are plenty of other incursions. But generally speaking, when you thought of pop music in the 80s, you thought of Michael Jackson and Madonna. And so what happens is people get that idea fixed as like, that's pop. And if I want to be popular, I should probably make music that kind of goes in that lane.
And that lasted for decades, right? That gives us Justin Timberlake, as you said, the boy bands.
Well, NSYNC and Backstreet Boys.
Britney Spears.
Britney, Justin.
Christina.
Absolutely. It's all that
through
stuff.
Lady Gaga and Katy Perry.
And obviously, the way that the Swedes did it is they like slightly refracted it through dance music, and they slightly refracted it through club music, and extremely polished. Very, very high gloss.
A lot of four on the floor, straight ahead beats, a lot of anthemic, celebratory, we're having a good time choruses.
Very exuberant stuff. And that worked fine. And it was almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy. It was like the most amount of money is thrown behind the people who can make this kind of sound, and this kind of sound will therefore be popular. And if this sound is popular, it would birth more people doing this kind of sound. It all made sense. Like, it, in a weird way, no one... I don't want to say no one questioned it, but I think it was just accepted that, like, that kind of music would be popular with a lot of people, and everybody else was fighting for the rest of the table.
Very white. It was black music as delivered by white people.
Very,
generally.
Very, yes. Very neutered, very divorced from original context, and again, very, very polished in a way that was almost meant to, I mean, remove almost all signs of life. Like, forget blackness. I mean, it was almost like digital product. Certainly by the 2000s, it was almost like a digital product. It was like a data file.
And then, so what was happening sort of simultaneously, largely online, that ended up, you know, taking over this host body?
Well, it's two things, right? First of all, if you look at what's happening with hip-hop in the mid-90s into the mid-2000s, you have these breakthrough moments, whether it's the Chronic or the Biggie Smalls records.
Rich or Die Tryin', later. Yeah.
All these records, you're like, well, these are extremely popular hip-hop records. And then 50, Jay-Z, all of a sudden making songs that you're like, well, okay, they're making these efforts to like get these songs maybe more on pop radio. A lot of melody, a lot of like very real juxtaposition stuff, real like, tough rhymes, sweet chorus, like a lot of things.
Leave Ja Rule alone.
Hey, a great American and not a criminal.
A great New Yorker.
Definitely a great New Yorker. That's the thing I love about New York is that it sustains Ja Rule. So that's happening in hip hop. But then when the internet comes along, really the first people to take to it from a musical perspective are rappers. And we're talking about online distribution. We're talking about mixtapes. We're talking about ringtone rap. Like, we're basically anytime.
Free music and a ton of it.
Has anybody else ever seen the video of, you mentioned Soulja Boy earlier. There's anybody else ever seen the video of Soulja Boy reading his YouTube comments and being like, that's another 5 cents. That's another 5 cents. I don't even know if that's how YouTube comments work.
I don't think you get paid off comments. There's another, I remember another early Soulja Boy video and they ask him like, oh, you're so good at the internet. Like, you're really into computers. And he's like, I'm not into computers. I'm into money.
Yeah, that's right. SODFG. Yo, I wear 10 and a half. Anybody has yums looking around?
Wow. What do those go for on eBay?
Not a lot because they're very, I mean, they're rare, but weirdly not a lot. I used to have an eBay alert, but I never came up on a good one. You know, I'd already own a pair if I had already come up on a good pair. So the internet's happening. Should we just play some Soulja Boy?
Yeah.
Crank that Soulja Boy. You!
Soulja Boy, tough. Hey, I got this new dance for y'all called the Soulja Boy. You just gotta punch, then crank back 3 times from left to right. Soulja Boy, I'm finna oh. Why me crank it, why me roll? Why me crank that Soulja Boy, that Superman, that oh. Now why me you crank that Soulja Boy? 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 Now why? Soulja Boy, I'm finna oh. Why me crank it, why me roll? Why me crank that Soulja Boy, that Superman, that oh. Now why me you crank that Soulja Boy? 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 Now why? Soulja Boy up in it, oh. Why me lean that, why me rock? Superman, that oh. Yeah, why me crack that RoboCop? Super friend, now why me jock? Jocking on them, hate them, man. When I do that Soulja Boy, I lean to the left, then crank that thing, now you.
So the thing is, like, from a pop, quote-unquote, perspective, that stuff's happening in another unit, right? It's not that they're not paying attention to it. It's just like, they're like, well, that will never come into our turf. Our turf is this, again, this privileged space. Like,
and it was considered an exception to the rule when the song like that would take off. It was novel. Yeah. It was still novel. Mm-hmm. Even when you have, you know, chart weeks in 2003 or whatever that are majority hip-hop. it still felt like a blip, and it was never encroaching on capital P pop territory.
No, and even like when artists like Nelly come along, you're like, like what Nelly is doing is fundamentally more of a pop structure, but he's not making pop records. They are just widely accepted rap records. And that's sort of, if you were going to see country music on the pop charts, if you're going to see hip hop on the pop charts, you're going to see hard rock on the pop, typically you would have, it'd be one of two ways. You'd have extreme compromise records or outlier moments where things just happen to slip through. MOP's anti up.
Right.
All of a sudden being a smash. You're like, what? Shouts to MOP though. Love, you know, Lil Fame and Billy Dance.
So then how did the sort of mixtape era lead into that becoming a tributary into actual quote unquote pop?
Well, I think a lot about how formative musical experiences are for people and how the music that you're exposed to and engage with when you're 9 years old, 12 years old, 14 years old really does shape the turf that you're working on. And I think everyone, we're going to get to the current moment in a minute, but I would venture to say almost everybody who is genuinely succeeding in this current moment, when they were 12 or 15, probably the most famous person was Kanye West, maybe Drake, depending how old they are. And what do you have? You have pop-oriented hip-hop stars, very invested in melody, less invested in genre rules and high walls between genres. And if that is the accepted common grammar when you're 12, the music that you're going to make when you're 19 or 24 or whatever is going to build upon that. And so what I think you're happening is all those kids raised on the internet that they had in their homes. I didn't have the internet in my house when I was a kid. Did you have the internet in your house?
Yeah.
yeah. Imagine a life where all you know is that all the rules don't exist or that people are breaking down the rules. What you're going to build upon that is going to be fascinating. And when you see the people who are most taking advantage of the internet, most fluent in this new medium, they're all rappers. It's all hip hop stuff. So that's what you're going to build on. That's going to be the template that you're working from.
And then they are in turn more willing to bring in outside genre, and you get someone like a Juice WRLD.
True. It's exactly right.
Let's listen to that Juice WRLD Panic at the Disco song that Benny Blanco put together, because I think that's quite a telling new pop example.
I think it's called Roses.
Roses are red, violets are blue. My heart is dead, I'm such a fool. Why did I fall for you? I gave it all for you. Roses are red, violets are blue. My heart is dead, I'm such a fool. Why did I fall for you? I gave it all for you. Feeling lost, don't know what to do. I just got some in the back of my car. Still feeling dead when I think about you. I can't do a damn thing when I'm without you. I'ma take a trip to the past, off the shrooms, off the acid. Then I'm bad. Call me young savage, but I'm ballin' like a young man. It's heartbreak music is such a passion. I thought I left it inside the past tense. You gave me your heart, it was made of plastic. No father heaven, I'm a bastard.
So as I was sort of trying to unpack what's been happening, I tried to basically like untangle each thread individually. Latin music thread, country music thread, pop punk thread, hip hop thread. I tried to untangle them. And what I realize when you start doing that, you all end up at the same point. You end up basically in the mid-2000s, hip-hop finally sort of accepting melody and moving so fast on the internet that it's almost by definition going to shape everything that it touches. Any kid who's on the internet in 2005 or 2010, that's it. That's like the loudest, most vibrant stuff in the way that a certain kind of rock music was the loudest, most vibrant stuff on the radio in the 80s. Different medium, different era, different frameworks. So because of that, I started sort of seeing these parallels. And I'm like, well, okay. So basically the same thing has happened in all these things that we have formerly thought of as subgenres. So when you start looking at an aggregate, you're like, oh, it's actually the same exact thing that's happened. Everybody listened to 808s and Heartbreaks. Everybody listened to Take Care. And then they made those decisions. They made their musical decisions based on what they learned.
So who are our new pop stars then? Who fits in that sort of A tier? Because I think the other aspect of it that we haven't really gotten into, although we've tiptoed around it, is that they're all sort of social media native.
They're social media native, and they're largely non-white.
Yes.
I mean, that is like the central thing here is like there was all this agonizing, not by people who cared about hip-hop, but from the outside world in the 90s, whether it was NWA leading to Dr. Dre, leading to Biggie, leading to Snoop, whatever, like, oh, hip-hop is going to take over. And in my heart, as a fan, I was like, yeah. But like there were plenty of people who weren't excited about that. But the truth is, as pop was still sturdy, backed up by radio infrastructure, live music infrastructure, all that stuff, it was a closed loop and it was going to maintain its presence. There were certain doors that hip hop had not been able to kind of like knock down or kind of slide through. That's not the case anymore. And so what happens is you have a very, very central framework that to me is all premised upon right now, it's Drake. It's built on Kanye. It's built on Pharrell. But it's Drake. Should we play something from Take Care?
Yeah.
So let's listen to Headlines from Take Care.
I might be too strung out on compliments, overdosed on confidence, started not to give a f*** and stop fearing the consequence, drinking every night because we drink to my accomplishments, faded way too long, I'm floating in and out of consciousness, and they saying I'm back, I'd agree with that, I just take my time with all this sh- I still believe in that, I had someone tell me I fell off, ooh, I needed that, and they wanna see me pick back up, well, where'd I leave it at, I know I exaggerated things, now I got it like that, tuck my napkin in my shirt, cause I'm just mobbing like that. You know good and well that you don't want a problem like that. You gon' make someone around me catch a body like that. No, don't do it. Please don't do it. Cause one of us goes in and we all go through it. And Drizzy got the money, so Drizzy gon' pay it. Those my brothers, I ain't even gotta say it. That's just something they know. They know, they know, they know. They know, they know, they know. They know.
So this, I think for me personally, and I think for people who care about and also make pop music generally, this album is like a real watershed moment. 808s and Heartbreaks, of course, which precedes it, is as important. But I think Drake, Kanye always seems so sui generis. He always seems like you couldn't possibly do the thing that he has done. And then what Drake did is Drake did the thing, but then like kind of like extended it a couple more steps forward. And I think that's the moment that then frees everybody else up to build off this.
It allows us Post Malone.
Yes, it's true. I mean, ultimately, that's true. I mean, what is Post Malone doing if not 808s?
Yeah.
Like, he's just doing 808s.
Via Drake.
Yeah. I mean, that's all he's doing. So Drake, to me, is the lodestar, right? Like, Drake is the thing around which this whole thing is orienting itself. I think if you're looking, I mean, we can talk more micro, but I think if you're looking within previously what we thought of subgenres, Sam Hunt, Kane Brown, Ozuna, Bad Bunny, J Balvin, XXXTentacion and Lil Peep.
BTS, as you mentioned.
BTS, Big Bang, G-Dragon, 21, CL, like all those guys.
Cardi B.
I mean, really all of K-pop. Like, really, like, literally all of K-pop. But yes, Cardi. So these are people who have a lot of Post Malone. These are people who have all these things that we've been talking about in common. They are working with similar musical frameworks. They're working within similar moods. They are working with similar structural and formal approaches. And I think if we are not acknowledging that set of tools as a standalone genre, we're not seeing what's really happening. You're still living in the shadow of the old thing. If you're basically saying, I'm looking at a Billboard chart and all I see is stuff that is not pop music, your framework's wrong. And I think that's the reason we did this package. That's why I wrote this piece. That's why you did your charts. we want to encourage people to start to basically scuttle that old framework and start working with this one.
And it's interesting also to watch people try to cling to their old dominance, right? And we can talk about, you know, I think we've talked plenty actually about Taylor sort of using pop and using someone like Future on Reputation.
Big
and
trying reputation.
Trying to basically be both, you know, the trap drums, et cetera. And, you know, it's her, as we've discussed, it's her worst performing album. And I think you've seen a lot of that in the last few years. You have Katy Perry's Witness, you know, remember she put out a song with the Migos? Like, that album, you know, still, I believe, has not gone platinum.
I'm just wincing.
The previous Katy Perry album, you know, Prism from 2013, has something like five top 40 hits, top 25 hits. Mm-hmm. I think the most recent one, Witness, has one, and that's just Chained to the Rhythm, which like was like a false start single. You know, you sort of you see a lot of these people grasping for air. You have a Sam Smith single with Timbaland, you know, that doesn't really land. And you have these people sort of realizing that the ground underneath them has shifted and has become rap dominant, basically. Yeah. And they don't really know how to react. And what's been interesting to me as I've gone through the numbers and the charts and, you know, the Nielsen data is when you do have number one albums from non hip hop oriented
right
stars,
from old pop, from 1.0, not 2.0,
or rock, which is like old pop, you right. know, whatever. Yeah.
When they were still charving in numbers on right. tablets,
right? And there's always some sort of a trick involved, you know, like you have these things, because a number one album is still very important to any artist, right?
Right. And it has validity, because especially now that it takes streams into account,
yes.
It has validity. And that's why in the piece, you guys will notice, I remember reading Billboard or reading on the website the week that I talk about this week in August where BTS and Ozuna debuted in the top 10. I remember looking at that and being like, oh, this is it.
Right.
This is the new pop order. Like, this is pop, and this is not seven subgenres ascending. This is pop.
Mm-hmm.
And this other stuff, in anything, it's weirder when another kind of
right.
record
so
ends.
So I'm gonna read you a list of people who had number one albums in 2018 outside of some of the people we've mentioned so far. Jason Aldean, Dave Matthews Band, Carrie Underwood, Shawn Mendes, Mumford & Sons, Jack White, 5 Seconds of Summer, Panic at the Disco.
5 Seconds of Summer had number one.
Had a number one album in 2018. I'll tell you why in a second. Paul McCartney and Bon Jovi.
Yeah.
These are all acts with number one. But this feels so removed from what this year in music was like. The reason.
How many of those records you listened to?
Half?
Shawn Mendes. What did you listen to besides Shawn Mendes?
Carrie Underwood, Jason Aldean.
Yeah.
5 Seconds of Summer I played through once or twice.
I listened to Carrie. I've listened to Shawn Mendes.
Panic at the Disco. I heard some of those Paul McCartney songs.
I definitely heard some of those songs. I wouldn't say I listened to that album.
So, you know, when you were talking about rap sort of not breaking in on radio and live music initially, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s, that still holds a bit for live music. So what these acts are doing is something called a ticket bundle. And a ticket bundle is...
It's a lie. It's a lie. Just call it what it is. Call it by its name. It's a lie.
So all of these acts have huge live fan bases, right? Everyone wants to go to a concert. You want to go see Paul McCartney in concert. You want to go see Bon Jovi, Jason Aldean. You know, these are primarily live acts at this point. And what they do is they build into the price of a ticket to the concert, they build in a copy of the album. And it's basically like, you want to go see Jason Aldean? Congratulations. You're getting a free copy of Jason Aldean's album. Now, to be fair, for it to count on Billboard, you have to redeem the album. So you have to log online and download it or ask for it to be shipped to you or whatever. You have to say, it's included in the price, and then you have to say, yes, I do want to receive
it. But I'm sure those systems are mature enough to basically make sure that that happens.
And you've seen this evolve a little bit in the merch bundle idea, which is something that Travis Scott famously did and upset Nicki Minaj. Then again, Nicki Minaj also did it. She just sells fewer merch orders.
Focus on your craft.
Focus on your craft.
Oh my god.
Lil Wayne did it for his album. You know, so
focus on your craft.
So you get these artists basically who need to still land a number one album. If you're not streaming, it's really hard because Juice WRLD might beat you on his 12th week, even though he's selling technically he's selling fewer than 1,000 albums a lot of weeks, but he's streaming tens of millions of times, and those streams are factored into album. Right. A certain amount of streams equal an album sale.
Everyone you just named had a ticket bundle?
Yes.
Every single one.
That list was all ticket bundles. So this is...
Y'all ain't right for this.
But these are the sorts
Y'all are
of...
Y'all not right for this.
These are the sorts of last grasps at the sort of pop mantle that you're seeing from an old class of star. And so...
I'm going to go press play on the Juice WRLD album and then go on vacation.
And just let it run.
I'm just going to let it ride.
Look, I mean, streams are probably just as BS. You know, we've seen Tidal be accused of juicing its streams this year. You know, a lot of these... YouTube constantly being accused of juicing its streams. Look, who knows? Who knows? SoundScan also not exactly the most accurate.
Sure.
When we used to say so-and-so sold 10 million albums. All of but these systems are imperfect.
Everybody is basically the default mode now is gaming the system.
Yeah,
that's
of course,
the default
of
mode,
course.
Certainly for legacy artists.
Right. But what streaming allowed us to do was, you know, if you only looked at the Billboard chart and you only listened to the radio and you only watched, you know, network television, you could think that Katy Perry is still the biggest artist in the world. What streaming started to do was pull back the curtain on that. And you're like, wait a second, actually, this violent young man, XXXTentacion, is actually way more famous in 2017, 2018 in terms of music than someone like Katy Perry or Sam Smith.
And also, like, something we have to at least take into account is, like, say you have purchased a Katy Perry album. I don't know you, but you may have purchased a Katy Perry album. If you are listening to that album in the comfort of your own home, on a CD player or on a turntable or even in your iTunes, we have no way of knowing if you are doing that. So we can't fully account for popularity from people who are purchasing albums. That is sort of like it's a flaw. It basically front loads the popularity.
Right.
It's like it only counts the first week and you just don't know. You could be playing it every day for a year, but we have no idea. So there is this kind of small glitch in how the legitimacy of the streaming numbers, not that the streaming numbers are false, but that there's a thing that it doesn't account for, which is this kind of like ongoing private listening, yada, yada.
Right. And that makes it so it's very hard for a quote unquote traditional pop album to stick around the charts unless it has a huge streaming hit.
Yes.
Because you'll have someone like Taylor who, you know, Reputation wasn't available to stream in its first few weeks, sold a bunch of copies, more than a million copies. And, you know, but it could only really stick around the top five for a couple weeks. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you go back to her previous album, 1989, it spent 11 weeks at number one, 24 weeks in the top five, you know, basically half a year in the top five. Whereas Reputation, because it didn't really have a song that was popping on Spotify or Apple Music or YouTube,
you know, it fades.
Delicate snuck up later in the year and sort of brought her back around. But you just see the grasp of the sort of top 40 pop machine used to be so tight.
And now
they're just slipping.
Should we listen to Delicate?
Let's listen to it.
Justice for Delicate.
Dive bar on the east side, where you at? Phone lights at my nightstand in the black. Come here, you can meet me in the back. Dark jeans and your Nikes, look at you. Oh, damn, never seen that. Never been worse, so you must like me for me. Yeah, I want you. We can't make any promises now, can we, babe? But you can make me dream. Is it cool that I said all that? Is it chill that you're in my head? Cause I know that it's delicate. Is it cool that I said all that? Is it too soon to do this yet? Cause I know that it's delicate. Cause I'm
So, Joe, a thing that I know that we've talked about a bunch and is represented in some of this data, how valuable is it for an album to have one big song? How important is it? Because you mentioned these
extremely
albums.
Extremely important.
Yeah, you mentioned these albums that kind of have no big song or like no one standout song and they fade. But then you have people who are on the charts for weeks and weeks and weeks, often largely off the strength of one big record.
For sure. And I think this goes back to the CD era as well. Like when I was thinking this out, I was like, you know, if you had one breakout radio hit, you could sell millions of albums. Like think of something like Chumbawamba, you know, you have like Tub Thumping, yeah. And this is a song everybody knows, and this album sold millions of copies, and like the odds that anybody really listened to the rest of the Chumbawamba album, like these are like what, Canadian anarchists, like this is like some
Scottish,
yeah, so, yeah, whatever. Chumbawamba, email me. Sorry, I don't remember your biography, but
no, the Canadian, that's Baka, not nice. I think is who you're thinking of when right. You think Canadian anarchists. Just
this is not, you know, this is you're getting a platinum album based on a single, right? And that still happens now in streaming, but you can see it more clearly.
And it feels not, maybe not that it wasn't earned the other way, but you see the work now.
Of course. So I keep going back to this example, but if you take Queen, the Nicki Minaj album this year, which performed commercially disappointing, I would say, as Wikipedia would put it. So this is a 20 track album, right?
Don't email Joe.
Don't email me. This is a 20 track album. The first week it was out, it did 129 million streams. A third of those streams were from the song Fifi with 6ix9ine. A full third.
And that song had been out previously, but then attached to the surgically album surgically midway stitched through the week together.
Yeah. So this is such a big song that it's basically carrying this whole album. So then if you look at the numbers now, so Queen this
we're 4 months out.
Yeah. So it's in November. Queen, you look at the numbers being streamed about 20 million songs from it are being streamed about 25 million times a week. About 20 or 22 million of those streams are from Fifi. So that's like 88% of the people who are still listening to Queen are listening to one song. And you see this, you know, with Drake too. And obviously having Drake on your album, he's like the king of this pop 2.0, this new pop, right, this streaming pop. Take a song like Sicko Mode, you know, it's the same thing.
So having, as opposed to Drake's own album, you're saying?
Yeah, yes. Like it, just having Drake on your album, mm-hmm. You know, Sicko Mode, cool song, Drake or not, but there's no, you know, there's no arguing that Drake doesn't have a huge effect on what gets played these days.
Yes. So, like to me, like Sicko Mode is not the best, not even like top five best song on a Travis record, but it is.
I disagree, but fine.
But it's like top one song with Drake.
Yeah. Right. So like, you know, Sicko Mode is like, we're going to have a little chart that you'll be able to see online, you know. In the beginning, it's 15% of the plays for the whole album. In the second week, it's like 20% of the plays for the whole album. By the time you get to week 17, this most recent week when Travis had his number one, where the album went back to number one, Sicko Mode is accounting for more than 70% of the total streams for the whole album.
So basically, without Drake taking his Xanax and passing out for 13 hours.
Taking the recommended dose and then taking a long nap.
Yeah. Without that, Travis does not have a return to number one.
Oh, well, he also had a merchandise bundle, so we
a
could
second
get
merch bundle. Yes. A second merch bundle.
New merch. So
y'all are not right.
These are all games, but they do eventually have an influence on who we think of as our pop stars.
Absolutely.
And that's what that's what charts and data and stuff can be good for, is it leads you in a direction. And for instance, when people book SNL, when they book late night TV, when They look at these numbers, you know, having a number one album, being number one on Spotify, being number one on Spotify global playlists, you know, all of these ingredients come into play, and they sort of give us this picture of the pop landscape.
And sort of the kind of mirror image of that is like one of the struggles that we've talked about on podcasts over the last 2-3 years is like, how do you write about young artists who are incredibly influential and popular online? And there's the school of thought that says you shouldn't engage with them at all. But like,
if they've committed.
Yeah. If they, you know, X or 6ix9ine. Exactly. Yeah. But when you look at these numbers, you're very aware that these things are happening, whether or not you weigh in on them, whether or not you say anything. And it begins to seem almost willfully reckless to ignore it, because then you're just letting it happen unimpeded.
It is interesting to see the kind of artists who are doing numbers that could put them in this class, but who still get kept out of some of these conversations. Because what I think you saw with Bad Bunny, with Cardi B, with BTS, is eventually the gatekeepers, the sort of mainstream old school gatekeepers, I'm thinking about award shows, radio stations, late night shows, morning shows, they eventually had to play catch up and they had to start playing music entirely sung in Spanish, or BTS had a big performance on the American Music Awards?
Yeah.
Something like that. But then there are people who are doing numbers on that scale that are kept out. I'm thinking specifically of like street rap. I'm thinking of someone like NBA Youngboy or Kodak Black. Mm-hmm. These are people who's,
Kevin Gates.
Kevin Gates gets some radio play.
And but Kodak he also Black like weirdly a sells play. A bunch of albums
yeah.
and then streams where you
want. But I think, you know, we're not saying that this is a free-for-all and that the gates are completely down and that anyone could be a pop star. Like, there are still
racial bias.
Yeah, and just ways to keep people out of these conversations. Mm-hmm. And then there's the sort of exceptions.
You mentioned global impact, and a thing that's really been happening a lot in the last 2 years, especially, is you start to see non-English language pop really have an impact in this country. And that's not something we've ever really engaged with before outside of, again,
novelty hits.
Novelties, Macarena, or whatnot, things of that nature. Let's listen to Ozuna. Ozuna, let's listen to El Farsante.
Sé que dejas cuando entras y sales. Donde quedaron los besos y todos los planes. No sé si vivir o morir. Me encuentro en un limbo desde que te fuiste de aquí. Eres la única persona que yo quiero que se ven encima de mí. Mi libertad no la quiero. Tampoco la vida es soltero. Yo lo que quiero es que quieran lo mismo que todos queremos. Tener una cuenta de banco con dígitos y mucho cero. Hacerle la mola diario y de paso gastar el dinero.
So for about the past 2 or 3 years, to my mind, there is no more popular person potentially on the planet than Ozuna. And I might be technically wrong, but I don't feel wrong.
In your heart, you feel Ozuna to be the most popular.
Yes. And I got an email last week from, I think it was the YouTube people, that said that he was the most streamed artist in 2018. Ozuna is an incredibly flexible performer. He sings, he raps, he does Latin trap, he does reggaeton, he does some bachata, he does some straight pop records. Ozuna, to me, is a very good example of what this kind of like 2.0 idea is. It's someone who can mold into different spaces, someone who has a signature enough vocal presence that he or she will always kind of stand out and will always be kind of like a key fixture, even when it is not their song that they are performing on. And when you look at how YouTube is tough, because YouTube numbers are global, so it's tough to know where the streams are coming from. But the fact that Ozuna, Bad Bunny, J Balvin, that they're streaming on YouTube is so, so gigantic. That is something that is very, very present in American music, whether it's Despacito or the 300 fake Despacitos that have emerged in the wake of that song. And this is something that you're also seeing with K-pop. We led off with BTS featuring Designer. So BTS had 2 number one Billboard albums this year, streaming heavy. I don't know if those albums received physical American releases. I'm not sure. Again, the stands will correct me. But the potency of K-pop in this country almost all internet driven, is a reminder that not only are the old walls breaking down around genre, but they're also breaking down around language. Let's listen to actually an older K-pop record that I think was important in kicking this along, and that is G-Dragon. Let's listen to Crayon.
Money, I get bullet by swash, swash. Money, I get bullet by swash, swash. 아직도 굴리지 않아, yes, I'm a pretty boy. 난 날아다녀, so fly, 날아리 boy. 월화 수목금 털 난 바빠 오빠 나 봐 bad boy I'm a G to the D golden diamond boy 누가 아니래 you know I'm busy 오늘의 DJ 나는 철이 너는 me Ay. 아가씨 아가씨 난 순결한 지영씨 이리 와봐요 귀요미 네 남자친구는 지모미 너 맞지 다 맞지 내 이상형 속에 미소 김태기와 김미소 Oh my god 전지현 Why so serious? Catch a crayon! 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 Catch a Why so serious?
So G-Dragon is a member of Big Bang. I think he's in military service now. Big Bang was playing reasonably sized shows. You want to say like 8,000 people, 10,000 people here in this country 5 years ago or 4 years ago. And there were other K-pop groups that had performed in America previously, but Big Bang was the first time where you really felt there was something coalescing and really happening. And what Big Bang was doing was basically taking a Kanye Drake playbook, which is, say, singing and rapping, and then kind of mixing some of the Max Martin stuff in terms of, like, the kind of ecstatic, high-energy bit, and kind of just saying, well, this is the component parts. There's no anxiety over it. There's always anxiety in American pop. Are we allowed to do this? Can you cross this? Can a person who normally does A also do B? That's not a thing that really comes up in K-pop, or at least not that I'm privy to. And so I think Big Bang and 21, which is the all-female group on the same label, really kicked down a lot of the doors, and now BTS are kind of arriving into that moment and sort of like the conquerors, as those other two groups are fading a little bit because of military service and whatnot. So when I think about how important Latin music and K-pop has been to this current pop moment, what I'm really seeing is a young audience that is far less sensitive to genre boundaries. And also they don't, you know, they genuinely, it's the type of thing that used to advertise the internet. Like, you know, doesn't matter where it comes from, but I do think increasingly for young people, it doesn't matter where it comes from. Could come from Korea. Could come from Dominican Republic. It could come from the Bronx
or Florida.
Definitely could come from Florida. Definitely from Broward. It could come from Nashville. Which seems counterintuitive because Nashville is like the most hidebound city when it comes to American music making. But I think maybe let's listen to...
Well, you mentioned Sam Hunt, so let's play some Sam Hunt.
Yeah, let's listen to Break Up in a Small Town.
I knew I'd see her around. I'd be at some party. She'd show up and I'd be walking out. Or across some parking lot, hiding behind her sister. I'd look up, she'd be at the red light beside me in that white Maxima with the sticker on the back. I'd act like I didn't see her. But we play at the same pumps, flip through the same stations, and slow down for the same curves, run around with the same crowd. We just needed some time. She could get on with her life, and I'd get on with mine. Thought I would be fine. But maybe not. I knew she'd find a way to get over me, but I never thought she would get down with somebody I know. I guess that's just how it goes when you break up in a small town. I see our friends and they put on a show like they don't want me to know. So they give me the go around. But there's only so many streets, so many lights. Where it's like I can't even leave my house. Should've known all along you gotta move and move on when you break up in a small town.
You like them talking blues. You like that talking rap. Sam Hunt is your guy. So on the first Sam Hunt EP and album, it's called Montevallo. I almost called it Montevallo. That was it. If it's an
That's
Ozuna.
The Latin trap
If it's Ozuna, the Ozuna remix is Montevallo. On the first Sam Hunt album, which is Montevallo, this is from 2014. And at the time, it's kind of tough to overstate how heretical this seemed. Now, to be fair, it was coming out in the wake of Florida Georgia Line, Blake Shelton doing a rap song, Luke Bryan doing quasi-rap songs. But there was a...
It didn't feel as touristic.
To Sam Hunt didn't.
Yes.
Yes, right. Those seemed very blatantly like country dudes doing rap.
With a wink and a laugh.
And like, you know that this is a moment that we are participating in quasi-ironically. Sam Hunt was just like, no, I'm country Drake.
I listen to Drake.
Yeah, like I
listens to Drake right. once.
Yes, or a thousand times. Yeah. And that to me, I'm actually weirdly surprised there hasn't been 20 people subsequent to Sam Hunt.
It's not easy.
Well, no, you have to have, if anything, it shows just how, frankly, talented in a raw sense that you have to be. Kane Brown, who has been popular for the last couple of years and had number one album this year, is probably the first person to go back and forth. But even he doesn't play with it as much as Sam Hunt does. And this is also partially about race. Sam Hunt is white. Kane Brown is black. And I think if Kane Brown was saying, like, I'm a rapper and a country singer, it would be received in Nashville probably.
It'd be put in a different lane.
It'd be different. So really what Kane Brown is trying to say is, I'm a traditionalist country singer, but yes, I too have listened to Drake once. And so if these rules can infiltrate K-pop, if they can infiltrate Latin music, if they can infiltrate country, if they can infiltrate pop punk, and then all of those things are following the same playbooks, why are we not talking about this as new pop?
I mean, you know, we haven't mentioned the god Pete Wentz, but he was quite he was quite early on
Pete
all
Wentz
of this
was there.
In terms of, you know, signing rappers, working with rappers, signing Tyga back in the day, you know, like, and incorporate and realizing Fall Out Boy was one of the first bands, you know, shout out to 1975, to be like, look, it's not going to pay to be a band for very much longer. We better get some program drums.
Wait,
on this
while
shit.
We're talking about Pete Wentz, should we talk about my boy, Nothing Nowhere? Originally,
Nothing Nowhere's moment hasn't come yet,
okay.
Other than his New York Times feature.
Nothing Nowhere still slaps, just
look,
FYI.
I think he could still break
Pete
through,
Wentz,
but...
Pete Wentz signed Nothing Nowhere.
I don't know that he's made it to this conversation quite yet.
Okay.
But play a little bit of it, because it does, sonically, it speaks to where you're coming from.
Let's play Houdini by Nothing Nowhere.
Isolation is the hideout I'm chasing. Overdose on lonely nights that were wasted. I could feel the reaper close, I hear him pacing. The days roll by, nothing changes. Sunset, sunrise, losing patience. I'm too far gone, don't try to save me. I hate myself more than any man could ever hate me. Alright. From the pain like a day blame. You know my name, you know me.
There was a moment in, was this 2017 when this came out? When I heard the songs on this record and I was like, oh, this should be on Z100.
Similar to Lil Peep or something.
Exactly.
Like that.
I was like, this is Z100 music. And when I say Z100 music, I mean essentially music for like white kids on Long Island or New Jersey.
Love you all.
And moms too.
Yeah.
Also love the moms. But to me, and I don't mean that in any kind of pejorative sense, just in the sense that it was that broadly relatable, the component parts that it was working with, you can find yourself into it. You can find yourself into it if you were into hip hop. You can find yourself into it if you're into punk. You could find yourself into it if you were into straight ahead pop. From a melodic perspective, Peep, Nothing Nowhere, Juice WRLD, X, if you can get past the X stuff, all that stuff is very, very familiar from a melodic perspective. And so I don't know where I was going. I just felt like I had to shout out Nothing Nowhere. So anyway, that's all. It's all happening.
Right.
And so if this isn't a pop framework, what is?
We're leaving out a few big names of, you know, I already see the at replies. I already see the emails, the whatabouts.
Say so the whatabouts. Let's shoot them down.
There are some zeitgeist shifting pop stars that exist in both the old mode and the new mode and sort of straddle the line. I'm thinking about Rihanna.
Yes.
I'm thinking about Beyonce. I'm moving along a spectrum here in my mind, and I'm thinking about Ed Sheeran, yes, Ariana Grande, and Adele.
Let's duck hunt the easy one.
Okay, go.
Adele is like a 1940s star. Like, Adele is not musically flexible. Adele does not engage broadly. Like, her idea of working with a current producer is like, you know, a guy who basically
Max Martin.
Yeah, but it's like the most tame Max Martin stuff.
Well, the literal like softest Max Martin song.
So Adele to me doesn't even enter the conversation.
She's playing a whole different game.
I think she's completely similarly Bruno Mars.
Right.
Bruno Mars is someone who, in my mind, if you discount the 1.0 of Bruno Mars when he was like, I'm going to sing hooks on rap records and da da da. If you kind of like move that aside, current Grammy winning. Arena
pop
touring
star Bruno Mars.
Bruno Mars is someone who excels at mimicry. He excels at making songs that sound like a very specific time period that you are already fluent in. I do not feel personally that Bruno Mars is in conversation with the rest of pop music.
Similarly to Adele.
Yes. So I think they are in their own spaces. I have to sit up right for this next part.
And Beyonce is sort of having her own conversation as well, just in a totally different space.
So here's the thing about Beyonce, and the thing that you can say about Beyonce, you can say this about Adele, slightly less so about Bruno Mars. Beyonce's vocal talent is so singular, and it's so overpowering, that anything that she engages in dialogue with, she takes over. She absorbs. And you hear this even when she's not singing. On this Carter's record this year, she's rapping a bunch of that.
She's
record.
Rapping an Offset verse and a Quavo
verse. Yeah, and she's rapping, and she sounds great. But I do not fundamentally believe that Beyonce is like a particularly flexible performer. I think Beyonce, wow.
I'm just giving you eyes of fear.
Are you sure?
Your thought.
To me, because of the strength of her vocal talent, I don't see Beyonce moving in 100 different directions. She doesn't often rap. It's not baked into her basic presentation.
At this point, you don't think it is? Think about, okay, to me, this is still the defining pop moment of 2018. Again, it exists on a completely different planet, but it's Coachella.
Oh, absolutely.
And she's rapping a lot of that performance.
Yeah, okay.
Everything since the self-titled album, I would say, has a lot of rapping on it.
That's interesting. Does Beyonce feel modern to you, though? And again, it's no knock.
It's just hard to put her, as you say, in conversation with anyone else.
She just feels so sui generis.
A league of her own.
It just doesn't feel in conversation. I don't feel like there's Beyonce reactive pop.
Right.
Not a lot of it. And there's not Beyonce conversing with a lot of pop. I think what she does is she finds bits and pieces
Daddy
or producers
or whatever.
Yes. Whether it's songwriters or producers or whatever, and absorbs it into this bigger Beyonce-ism.
Sort of how Drake does.
Yes. But Drake is also, Drake feels more like a dialogue.
Yeah.
Drake gives as much as he takes.
And he takes a lot.
Yes. But I don't know that Beyonce, I don't know if it's dialogue with right. Beyonce.
There's no album that you would say it sounds like it is a post-Lemonade album.
Not that I can think of. Well, the Carters.
But see, to me, that's more like them being like, okay, we both did our weird insular albums. Now we're going to be in conversation with pop music a little bit. We're going to have Ty Dolla Sign. We're going to sing Amigos song. We're going to, you know, that.
Right, but is that in conversation with pop music or is it in conversation with hip-hop? And again, it's like not to, we're walking fine lines here. Yeah. But there is something that feels either slightly to the left or slightly above yes. this conversation.
Yes.
And so it's hard to talk about Beyonce in these terms because I don't experience Beyonce as, I'm sure she listens to all this music, but I don't necessarily experience and I don't experience her absorbing, repurposing, recycling back into this. She also drops a record once every 3 years.
Right.
There's not Beyonce and as much as we like Lemonade, it doesn't, you know, these were not records that were huge in
right.
the street. Like,
they weren't radio hits. They weren't.
They weren't even huge.
The Carters thing was like was tour merch, as I think, yes. you know, Rob Harvilla or someone like mm-hmm. that said. Hey, Rob.
Hi, Rob. So Beyonce feels maybe not of this conversation. Ariana.
Last pop star standing?
Kind of. She doesn't vary her vocal approach that much. I feel like Ariana records sound like Ariana records. Like yep. they don't, not that she doesn't collaborate, but they don't, especially the recent ones, they just feel very much engaged with the idea of Ariana Grande, not with the idea of pop music.
Although I read, I think someone said that Thank You Next was basically a Clairo song. And I think that if you wow. hear the, if you hear the instrumental,
damn.
Obviously vocally it doesn't make any sense, but the instrumental is very like bedroom pop, but the most expensive version ever.
I'm just trying to imagine a YouTube clip of Clairo playing or singing a version of Thank You Next yeah. and how that would sound.
Sorry, I'm forgetting who tweeted that, but I thought it was funny.
It's a great tweet. Yeah. Very strong. you know.
Yeah, John singing to himself.
I'm trying to just puzzle it through.
Yeah.
And it was telling in that Billboard story, shouts to Natalie, who wrote that, that Ariana talked about releasing her music more like a rapper.
Yes.
And I thought,
and I think we'll see that a lot in 2019.
And we're going to see that from people across the kind of musical and ideological spectrum. So, like, no problem with that.
More music, less tied to a traditional album cycle.
Two songs here, five songs there, one song there. Like, and that's fine. I mean, even William Michael Morgan is doing that. Like, these are
Sam Hunt.
Well, I don't
know. Sam Hunt's just not putting out music.
No, just, I don't know that. I don't know that we can put Sam Hunt in that role.
It seemed and that we're way see for more. A minute.
What's that?
It seemed that way for a minute.
I'm crossing myself. So we're going to see that more, and that's going to be how hip-hop has influenced the structure of how business gets conducted. But I have yet to engage with Ariana music that felt like it was in musical dialogue with this stuff that we're talking
Even
about.
Even her going to someone like Pharrell this time around.
That feels like going to Grandpa.
Right. And she went to Max Martin also, which is
This telling. Is all Grandpa stuff. I'm just being honest. Like, can you, I mean, if you are of the mindset that the way to make yourself younger and hipper is to get basically a kind of like off-brand nth wave Pharrell beat in the year of our Lord 2018, you're a grandma.
We know that you're a sweetener dissenter, so.
Even if I wasn't,
I
it's still wrong.
I hear
and
you.
I think one of those Pharrell songs is probably the best song on Sweetener. Not the one that you like, the other song. Right, but like, I just, it ain't it, Chief. Where were we? Rihanna and Sheeran. Well, let's end with Sheeran.
All right, let's do it.
Rihanna. Yeah, Rihanna is, I kind of struggled with Rihanna in terms of this piece.
I think she was born new pop, played the role of old pop,
yeah.
and has now shed that costume.
Yes.
And is going to continue doing whatever she wants.
Well, that's for sure. She's going to continue to do whatever she wants. Rihanna is someone who I think what she said is right. She was essentially trained to be a certain kind of singer. And almost molded from whole clay, but she is so kind of savvy and self-aware and like, frankly, like attitudinal that I think she just was like, ah,
right.
The hell with all that. And in a weird way, the last album may be kind of something that portends what her albums and other pop, quote unquote, pop albums, old pop might sound like. It was all over the place. It entered at a bunch of, you know, it had a bunch of different ideas.
Had a SZA song on
yeah.
it. It had a Drake song on it. It was, yeah.
And I didn't love everything on that record, but I think it maybe indicated the sound of old pop to come.
Yeah, Anti, I think, looking back on it, was quite progressive for an album from that upper echelon of pop star.
Right. It was not safe. It was not safe. It was like 10 or 12 potential misfires, and most of them didn't misfire. So, Ed Sheeran. All these charts, I keep seeing Ed Sheeran.
Ed Sheeran.
All these
Ed Sheeran didn't even put out an album this year.
He's still more popular than your mom's favorite artist. He is your mom's favorite artist. Ed Sheeran. Should we listen to Shape of You?
Yeah, we have to. It's the law.
Isn't the best place to find a lover, so the bar is where I go. Me and my friends sat at the table doing shots, tripping fast, and then we talk slow. And we come over and start up a conversation with just me, and trust me, I'll give it a chance. Now take my hand, stop, and the man on the jukebox, and then we start to dance. And now I'm singing like, girl, you know I want your love. Your love was handmade for somebody like me. Come on now, follow my lead. I may be crazy, don't mind me. Say, boy, let's not talk too much. Grab on my waist and put that body on me. Come on now, follow my lead. Come, come on now, follow my lead. Mm-hmm. I'm in love with the shape of you. We push and pull like a magnet do. Although my heart is falling too, I'm in love with your body. And last night you were in my room, and now my bedsheets smell like you. Every day discovering something brand new. First day, but you and me are thrifty, so go all you can eat, fill up your bag and I fill up the plate.
So what I originally wrote the kicker of my piece, I was basically like, well, y'all still have Ed Sheeran, so you can't complain that much. If you need a pop star that's old pop, you have Ed Sheeran. And then I was like, that's actually inaccurate. Ed Sheeran has collaborated with The Game. Ed Sheeran is rapping, albeit on the Taylor Swift album, which is a fairly safe place to rap as these things go. But he is rapping, collaborated with Fuse ODG, sort of well-known African artist, like did Shape of You, which is basically like a pop dancehall song made by three white people. Watch the making of the song video. Ed Sheeran's taking risks. Ed Sheeran is trying different things.
Galway girl.
Ed Sheeran, Pop 2.0? Kind of, yeah. And that was maybe the most shocking thing, is I was really building up to, like, the y'all still have Ed Sheeran argument, and actually it turns out you don't.
And I think Ed Sheeran has bought himself so much goodwill at this point by doing a little bit of everything for everyone that he's just going to continue to get weirder. And I think...
Do you really think that? I actually don't think that.
You don't think
true.
He'll continue to get weirder?
I actually don't think that.
You think he's going to revert back to Amin? I don't know. This guy likes a lot of weird stuff. I think, like, he's a listener also. I think he's
definitely
like on SoundCloud. You know what I mean? Like in the trenches. So we can take a bet on what the next Ed Sheeran album will sound like. But I would say it's going to have a lot more of these components that we've talked about today.
So maybe let's go out on a esoteric Ed Sheeran song. Let's go out on Boa May, which is one of the songs that Ed Sheeran recorded when he was in Africa on his kind of like his sojourn to like retreat from the pop life. And this is with Fuse ODG and Moogies. And this is Pop 2.0.
My
That's our show. Thank you for listening. Listen to every podcast ever, where we've been telling you this for years. Years. And nytimes.com/podcast. Email us. Tell us the things we left out. Your favorite unusual cross-genre collaborations. Anyone who's standing for the Kane Brown Becky G song. Email us at podcast@nytimes.com. And please subscribe to podcasts anywhere you get your audio content. That would be great. Our producer is Pedro Rosado from Head Stepper Media. We will be back next week with the year's final podcast.
This is Sam Sifton, food editor of the New York Times. Whether you're just starting out in the kitchen or looking to up your game, NYT Cooking is here with more than 19,000 times-tested recipes and all the help you need to cook them well. Subscribe today at nytcooking.com/podcast.
I'm Michelle Goldberg.
I'm Ross Douthat.
And I'm David Leonhardt. We're the hosts of The Argument, a new podcast from the New York Times opinion section. These days, it's more important than ever to listen to people who disagree with you. Maybe they'll teach you something new, or maybe they'll just teach you how to beat them. So listen to The Argument from the New York Times. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you like to listen.